Our theme for today is living simply, going together. As Christians, and as Christians who go to church regularly, especially, we recognize the importance of that theme. We know that our faith calls us into relationship with Christ, certainly, but also into relationship with each other. You know, these are strange and foreign words in a culture that worships individualism. It's an odd concept in an economy that's based on the promise that the one with the who dies with the most toys wins. It's hard to comprehend that what this theme is when we all seek something more. More house, more car, more status, more power, more stuff. In this drive for more, we find ourselves isolated and feeling alone. We're driven to protect our stuff, so we fear our neighbor. We build higher fences and put in security systems. We live in fear of losing what we have accumulated. While we understand and recognize and try to live simply together, living in this world and actually doing that is really hard. And then, as if that weren't enough, we just experienced the most contentious election process of our lifetime. Regardless of what candidate we supported, we are glad that it's finally over. Even so, though, we aren't naive enough to think that casting our ballots has ended the toxic environment that is pervasive in our country today. This election has exposed a huge divide between us, which perhaps explains why, as I was working on our sermon for today, my attention kept being drawn to the election. And I can't believe that I'm the only one struggling to make sense of things. As I thought about it, though, it occurred to me that maybe, just maybe, the gospel lesson that we heard this morning is precisely the word we need to hear. Our reading in John's gospel is directed at the church. It reflects who we are. We are those who follow Jesus. We don't just simply believe in Jesus. We don't just simply worship Jesus. If we truly want to be the church of Jesus Christ and try to live our lives following his example, we need to go together with this, both in the church and in the world. And we can do that by the grace of God. It's like a group of hikers who decided to climb up the beautiful Blue Mountains in Jamaica. The earlier parts of the hike were quite fine, but the closer they got to the top, the more treacherous that path became. They could no longer walk in groups, but now had to walk in single file. Halfway up the mountain, in the pitch darkness, the leader said, "Now follow my feet. Do not venture to the right." After he said this, he reached into his pocket and he retrieved a stone and he asked for their silence. And then he threw the stone off the right side of the trail. And they waited and waited, and waited, and waited, until finally They heard the sound of the stone reaching the bottom. From then on, there was no question about following close to that leader. Everyone in the group leaned against the left side of the mountain as they went up the rest of the way, trying very hard not to get close to that edge. It was a long, difficult journey following the leader, but when they got to the top, there was nothing but glory. In the same way, Jesus calls us to follow him. The path may be treacherous, but if we stay with him and follow him, one day we will share in his glory. You know, our lesson today takes us all the way back before Easter. And one of the most stunning parts of the text, I think, is the context. The passage comes right on the heels of Judas leaving the other disciples at the Last Supper to betray Jesus. It's a chilling moment in the text. But we know what's coming. We know where Judas is off to. But still, don't you wonder what Jesus would say, what he would do? Well, at this point, Christ turns to the remaining disciples and says, "My children, I will be with you only a little longer. You'll look for me, and as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I'm going, you cannot come." Don't you find that interesting? Jesus addresses his disciples as my little children. These were big, tough men. He calls them my little children. This is a term of love by which Jesus is expressing his concern for them. And then once again, he announces that he's going to be going away and they're not going to be able to find him. This isn't the first time that he's tried to explain that to them, that soon they would be on their own. But he needed them to know, too, that the separation is temporary. In time, the disciples would be able to go to that place that he has prepared for them. But first, they must walk this treacherous journey before reaching the summit of the mountain. Then he speaks these words to them. "A new command I give to you. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you're my disciples, if you love one another." Just like those hikers who survived the treacherous climb up the Blue Mountain by staying close to their leader and following in his steps, these 11 disciples would survive Jesus' absence by obeying his teachings and following his example of love. This new commandment in the text to love one another is very likely the most famous statement in what we read. Even folks who aren't what they would say, they may not even be Christian, they're not involved in a church at all, but they know that commandment, and or at least something similar. Is it really a new commandment? Hardly. Loving one another has been a part of Jewish tradition forever. It was present in the Greco-Roman world around them and seen in other religious traditions as well. Leviticus, one of the first five books in the Bible, the Pentateuch, the Torah, teaches the principle of loving your neighbor as you love yourself. The disciples already knew that. Gracious, Christ told them to love their enemy loving their neighbor as themselves ought to be a piece of cake, right? It's called the Golden Rule. And of course, variations of it are practiced today by people all over the world to one degree or another. But here's the thing. Loving those with whom we agree or are partial to is the easy part. Loving the rest of the folks with whom we come in contact, however, is much harder, isn't it? I'm sure that that's not news to those of you sitting in pews, maybe some next to others they'd rather not be sitting next to, or maybe in Bible study. It's a part of the human condition to want to be loved and to want to love. The reality, though, is that those who are loving and lovable are a lot easier to love. Martin Luther King Jr. said that peace is not the absence of war, but the presence of justice. Our world changes when justice prevails, when we love one another, no matter who they are. Justice and peace then become a part of our reality. When we work for justice and equality, we're fully living into that love that Jesus commanded us to show each other. Jesus didn't just mean a sweet sentimental feeling when he talked about love. He meant action. He meant actively loving, putting one's love into real world activities. We're to stay close to him, follow in his footsteps. And he was saying one thing in particular, the place where we absolutely can't have an enemy is within the church. If we do everything within our power to make that enemy a friend is what we need to do. How are we to love? We're to love as Christ loved us. He was willing to lay down his life on our behalf. A new command I give to you, Jesus said. Love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. The way Jesus talks about loving each other is a precursor to the spread of Christianity. As he loved and that love spread within his inner circle, so too will love spread after he's gone when love is done in his name. And in this act, he tells his disciples, those at the table and those of us here at Hope Island Church. Jesus makes his call to us pretty clear, pretty plain, I think. Let's hear it one more time. Let me give you a new command. Love one another as I have loved you. That's the way that the world will know that you're my disciples. James Boone, a Mennonite lay leader, organized communion for his denomination the day after the election. And he explains his reason for doing that in this way. He says, there's a perspective and a grounding that can only happen through the church. Consider all the tumult in our world, the effects of the election process, to be sure, but also the wars, the earthquakes, the suffering, the cruelty. Does God not have a word to say in the midst of all of that? Have we not been given a purpose to fulfill in the face of it? Are we not to be the light to the world? In the upper room at the Last Supper, friends, Jesus gives his friends this new commandment. Friends, it's about witness in the world. It's about how the world around us will see and know that we're disciples of Jesus. This commandment is about community. It's about the common good. It's about living as disciples of Jesus. He commands that we follow him up that mountain together. May it be so for you and for me. Amen.